What an electric start to the NFL's legal negotiating slash, I mean, really, come on. Free agency started. It began. Things are happening. The last 2 days have provided us with a ton of things to talk about. John Daigle joins us to break down all of the signings that have happened the last couple of days. Kirk Cousins to the Falcons, Russell Wilson to the Steelers, and a healthy running back market. Man, we got some movers and shakers. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, March 12th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day. Oh my God. I mean, truly, like I say it all the time, but this time it really is a hell of a day to talk ball because we've had so much has happened in the last 48, 72 hours. And joining me to talk a little ball is the one and only John Daigle. Daigle, what's going on, buddy?
Pulling me off the bench after the most chaotic 24 hours I can remember. Even if it's not fantasy football and we went to the trenches, which we won't do much today, but there is so much that happened in the league in this span. It was certainly a wild free agency.
Dude, I'm pretty sure you were on this version of the podcast last year. And at that time, we were like kind of scrounging for, well, you know, the Broncos signed Chris Manhurts. That might mean that like they really want to run the ball. Like, and for what we had then to what we have now, it's a hell of a change. And it's a welcome one. It's been a busy last 24 hours, been a busy last 48 hours. But hey, man, I mean, the NFL is alive and well. Our business is alive and well. And things are, we got a lot to talk about. That's for sure. So let's go ahead.
If this was last year's version, Lloyd Cushenberry would probably lead. But we can move on to talk about actual fantasy players today.
Well, hey, let's get started. I've sorted these things into 10 storylines here because otherwise, man, we were going to sit here and rattle off like 40 moves that have happened. Yeah. So we're calling these the 10 most important storylines coming out of the first 2 days of the, you know, legal tampering or legal negotiating window, essentially the two first days of free agency. These are the 10 biggest storylines, starting with number one. We got to start here. The Falcons land the big ticket. Falcons and quarterback Kirk Cousins agree to a 4-year, $180 million deal with $100 million guaranteed. The Falcons also signed wide receiver Darnell Mooney to a 3-year, $39 million deal. And in replacement of Kirk Cousins, the Vikings have signed Sam Darnold to a 1-year, $10 million contract. So let's start with the Falcons and this offense, John Daigle. You know, Kirk Cousins, it's a 2-year deal. That is what they're going to be tied to for him or tied with him essentially here. I mean, to me, I don't know where you stand with Kirk Cousins and coming off an injury, but to me, this felt like a move that not only kind of had to be done, it felt like it was going to happen and felt like it had to be done for the Atlanta Falcons.
The league's worst kept secret these past 2 weeks as well. It's interesting because from a pure fit standpoint on paper, it's clean as can be. It is, yeah, Kirk Cousins moving from Kevin O'Connell's and Sean McVay's scheme that runs and literally led the league in dropbacks from 11 personnel, 3 wide sets, now going to Zach Robinson, who we imagine will have some kind of spin on that offense as McVay's offense just continues to grow based on who comes out of it. What I think that nifty little spin will probably be, as I'm sure you are about to mention, is also the addition to Darnell Mooney in this scheme as the team's number 2 wide receiver behind Drake London and Kyle Pitts. And that's probably because they need a shifty, speedy receiver to play Tutu Atwell role, who, remember, without Cooper Kupp, Atwell actually led the league, even among Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, the Dolphins players, in motion behind the line of scrimmage. Because that's how, as we know, the smaller, faster receivers get speed, is to move quickly behind the line and then come out firing and beat your corner since you've already gained that momentum. I bet we're going to see a lot of that. So just to have an accurate quarterback now to help elevate Drake London and Kyle Pitts for fantasy, I think there's a reason why we're all high on him. Having said that really quickly, another caveat I'll be interested to see is how Cousins falls into post-draft DFS drafts on Yahoo DFS and Best Ball, for example, because his career trajectory is somewhat like Aaron Rodgers, honestly, because before last year, the 3 seasons prior with the Vikings, Cousins was quietly going downhill, slowly putting up progressively worse numbers, leading to a career worst 2022. And then last year, you don't even have to squint to see that he clearly played his best ball with the Vikings in his second year under Kevin O'Connell's offense as the QB7 in points per game. So I do wonder if this suddenly is like an Aaron Rodgers-like renaissance when Rodgers was on the decline as well and then won back-to-back MVP honors out of spite, basically. I do wonder if this is like a true bounce back for Kirk Cousins at 36, 37 years old. And that's the player he's going to be in his first year with Atlanta, too.
It's a great point. And to be honest, like, I think a lot of Kirk Cousins, like, we're putting a lot of stock in those, it was 8 games that he played last year for the Minnesota Vikings. And because prior to that, right, he'd been kind of always a bit of a butt of the joke, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Kirk Cousins can't win in primetime, the whole thing. But like that marriage between play caller and quarterback, Kevin O'Connell and Kirk Cousins here in Minnesota, I think was really spectacular. I think they, and I think Kevin O'Connell is sitting here, you know, was probably prepared to lose Kirk at some point, but I still think is pretty bummed about that loss of Kirk Cousins. But the way they worked together, I think from both a personal and professional level, was incredibly tight. I think they were just on the same page on a lot of things. And I think Kirk, the longer he played in that offense, the more comfortable he got. It's not too dissimilar, and obviously it didn't end the same way, of course, but it's not too dissimilar to when Matt Ryan played for Kyle Shanahan with the Falcons, where that first year it was a little up and down. It wasn't all the way there, but then the second year is really where it came out firing. That was kind of what we saw last year with Cousins, second year in O'Connell's offense. And now going to Atlanta, like you said, there should be a lot of overlap in what they ask him to do, a lot of overlap in the terminology. I think it's a slam dunk fit. Like you said, the worst kept secret in the NFL. And now, like, we're going to really be able to get a true baseline opinion on who Drake London is, on who Kyle Pitts is, on who Bijan Robinson can be with a run game that I think is going to be a lot more effective and a lot more kind of in line with where the league is right now with this coaching staff. Because, like, anybody that rostered these guys in fantasy knows this, but I mean, Desmond Ridder and Marcus Mariota were probably the two worst, like, or at least among the three worst starting quarterbacks in 2023 and 2022. So now just getting Kirk in here, regardless of where you think he ranks in the quarterback, like, pantheon in the NFL, look, we're going to get a real opinion on who these guys are at this point.
In early best ball drafts, which I have admittedly stayed away from just because, you know, since you and I grind this year round, day to day, I am concerned at this point in my life with burnout more than anything. So I do the analysis behind the scenes, but I will stay away until post draft. It's just what I do. And I know and agree, though, that the ADP currently for Drake London is a top 12 wideout, as it should be, because as we know, targets are earned. Yeah. It's something you preach on reception perception often. And Drake London, already from Desmond Ridder, earned the third highest target share among every receiver in the league, except those targets, because, as you mentioned, came from Heineke and Ridder. That's why he was the wide receiver 44 in points per game. Let's keep that ability up to earn targets and now get those targets from Kirk Cousins. I imagine it's going to make a world of difference.
Yeah, I mean, Drake London is a baller. He has every skill and trait that you would want from a true, legit number one X receiver in today's NFL. And I actually think that the way he is comfortable in tight coverage and the way that he runs routes over the middle of the field are really a perfect overlap with Kirk Cousins. So there's not only just like, yeah, we're going to get a good quarterback in here, like a baseline quarterback. I think London particularly fits with Kirk Cousins. I want to bring it back to the Darnell Mooney point that only like a fantasy football podcast would be talking about Darnell Mooney as like the second highlight here. But I'm with you that I didn't even think about it that way. But because when you just look at the Falcons depth chart, you know, the names behind Drake London are Josh Ali, Chris Blair, Austin Mack. Like, these are the wide receivers. So to me, it's like, yeah, okay, you signed Darnell Mooney because he's a competent, I think, in my opinion, like a number three receiver, not a high volume guy, but somebody that can give you snaps at flanker, somebody that can give you snaps in the slot, and like, you build the rest of the core out kind of and kind of see where he fits in. But the fact that you mentioned that pre-snap motion stuff, I had not really thought that, all right, Darnell Mooney is going to be like a big target getter, like a fantasy factor in this offense or anything like that. And he probably won't be. But the fact that he might fill that role, I don't know. You've really got kind of my gears turning on that idea.
And to throw one more wrinkle that you may not have thought of, I still wonder, given that, again, we are expecting this team to be top two, top three, and passes from three wide sets. I wonder what they do with number 8. If we just go with the four-peat for an offensive player inside the top 10, because Romo Odunes. You're going to have, I don't imagine Malik Nabers will be there, but you're going to have your choices. I wonder if they add another receiver with that top pick.
Possible. Like I said, I don't know if you've got a lot of scouting report on Chris Blair, but I mean, he's there's definitely some need for some more receivers beyond Drake London and now Darnell Mooney. Back in Minnesota, just before we move off this storyline, like I said, the Vikings sign Sam Darnold to a 1-year, $10 million deal. I mean, he could start games for the Vikings this year, potentially. I guess he's going to be their bridge option, but we all know, obviously, the plan is not let Kirk Cousins walk and, yeah, let's mess around with Sam Darnold for a year. Like, they're going to be drafting a quarterback, whether Darnold starts for them or not. Like, that is the next shoe to drop for Minnesota.
They will be drafting a quarterback, and oddly enough, as someone who, shout out to me, finished with the most accurate mock draft in the nation last year, I can tell you, I already have it in my notes that none of the big three, Kevin O'Connell, Josh McCown, Kwasi, none of them were at Bo Nix's pro day in Oregon. So I wonder if they already have it locked into either a trade up or JJ McCarthy at number 11 overall.
Dude, a trade up would be nice. A trade up would be really nice for one of the, you know, I don't know how, if they can get into the top three, maybe New England. I don't think Washington's trying to come down, but it would be pretty interesting to see a Drake May in this offense particularly. So just to kind of put a fantasy bow on this, you know, Justin Jefferson, obviously last year consensus number one pick. Is this quarterback risk enough for you to, I don't know, maybe start putting some other players ahead of him that you might not have if Kirk Cousins was going to be here?
I do believe so, just because the other options are pretty locked in. We'll talk about T. Higgins, Jamar Chase possibly separating, which bumps Chase up altogether. But Tyreek Hill, we've already seen what he can do under Mike McDaniel. And then the second half of CeeDee Lamb's season, whenever they started finally, I don't know why it took until nearly the end of his rookie deal to start moving him all around the field rather than just keeping him pigeonholed in the slot. But the second half of CeeDee Lamb's season was no fluke at all, given how he was used on the field. So I think CeeDee Lamb should be in the wide receiver one territory as well.
100%. All right, let's move on to the next thing here. Number two storyline. Pittsburgh Steelers take the low-risk plunge. They sign quarterback Russell Wilson to a one-year deal for $1.2 million. Of course, they can get away with this because Russ is going to retain the balance of his salary from the Denver Broncos. So, Russell Wilson, Pittsburgh Steelers, John Daigle, how does that make you feel?
Not excited. One of these stats I always look at, because it tends to regress year to year, as you do, is touchdown rate. And I bought into Russell Wilson, and I feel like I got lucky more than anything last year, but I bought into it because prior to that, before his final year at Seattle, he was coming off a career low, or his first year in Denver, I should say, he was coming off a career low touchdown rate. And again, we expect those numbers to regress year to year. And he did bounce back. And he bounced back in a big way. 5.8% touchdown rate, the fourth highest number in the league. The issue is that, one, being the fourth highest number in the league, we don't expect that to continue. He probably reverts back to what league average was last year. Not only that, but it came on a low volume, the 19th most pass attempts in the league. So I'm very worried about who Russell Wilson is at this point of his career. I'm curious if the reason the Broncos were the only team to target their running backs on 30% of their pass attempts, was that Sean Payton, or is that Russell Wilson not being able to capably throw downfield anymore? I'm not sure. So excited, I don't think that's the word I would use personally for Russell Wilson in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you mentioned it that Russell Wilson, in terms of quarterbacks that, you know, were relevant, took most of the snaps throughout the season. He led all quarterbacks in touchdown, or excuse me, in check down rate to the running backs.
Yeah.
Warren Sharp had this, that he threw 27% of his passes behind the line of scrimmage last year. That was the number one highest among 509 quarterbacks since 2005. So to say that they had the guardrails and the training wheels on Russell Wilson and Sean Payton's offense last year, I think that even that might not do it justice. To me, watching that offense last year, It did feel like a unit that was trying to hide its quarterback. So a lot of the stats that might look good for Russell Wilson, like, don't really pass the sniff test. Like, don't really pass the test when you pop the hood, like, take a little look under it. But at the same time, like, I think we can definitely agree that this is not an exciting move. That Pittsburgh is probably what, like, shooting for a ceiling of 9-8. Like, but that's what they always do. Maybe 10-7. A few breaks go the right way. But it is like, it's hard to hate the move just on face value because yeah. they're paying $1.2 million. And I don't know. I will say this though, Daigle, like to me, the idea that Russell Wilson is no question the week one starter and no question the starter throughout the season, like all 17 games, I don't buy that. I think they're when I say that, that's not an endorsement of Kenny Pickett. I have no like optimism and positivity for Kenny Pickett. I just think like, when I see my entire timeline, everybody on Twitter kind of reacting to this is Russ's job and this is his, that's set in stone. I mean, maybe, but he's not been a good quarterback for the balance of the last 2 years on film, period, end of story. So with that player in what I do think is going to be a volatile environment, right? The receivers are kind of volatile. Offensive coordinator Arthur Smith, I like the design of his offense, but he's a volatile personality. I do think there's a chance, and Wilson is a big personality. I think there's a chance that we see Kenny Pickett make starts this year, and I don't think that's being baked into the discussion right now.
Because of the propensity to dump the ball off, target his running backs, as we mentioned earlier, I will say that does get me a little bit more excited about Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren, considering, yeah. as you said, I know we all soured on Arthur Smith as a personality, a human being, because of his media press conferences. But as a play caller, like the worst take is that he's actually a very good play caller. The I fact know. That for you know the last 2 years in Atlanta, that they ran against 8-man boxes at a top 5 rate and still even 2 years ago led the league in carries in yards per carry against 8-man boxes. Like he can scheme up a running game even if the defense knows it's coming. So that does get me excited, at least about their backfield in terms of PPR leagues, if we think Russ will be dumping it off more there.
Yeah, Jaylen Warren, get ready to catch some passes. I mean, this team with Russell Wilson, with Arthur Smith and these guys here, like in the backfield, they might push to lead the league in rush attempts this mm-hmm. year. I will say, just last note, just on the players here, I do think he's a good stylistic fit, Russell Wilson with George Pickens. Like we have typically seen these big straight line kind of limited X receivers take off with Russell Wilson, right? I'm thinking DK Metcalf in Seattle, Cortland Sutton and him had a pretty decent connection there when Russell was playing well. So I think Pickens fits in that bucket of players. I think he's probably somewhere between Cortland Sutton and DK Metcalf in terms of how good he is. But I do think that that's a pretty good stylistic fit. Like he's, because that's the big question here with Russell Wilson and Arthur Smith. Can he operate over the middle of the field? The answer to that is no. I mean, he's never been a good he's never been willing to work over the middle of the field. This offense wants you to work over the middle of the field in Arthur Smith's offense, but George Pickens, more of that like straight line vertical X receiver, I think there is a pretty good pairing there.
It is eerie how similar Pickens is to Sutton, and that there's a reason why their highlight reels only include Hall of Fame catches, because yeah. their targets have been just so off the mark that both have been forced to use and highlight their hands, which are great.
Exactly. Yeah, pretty similar player comparison there. All right, number three storyline, and we got a lot to cover in this storyline. A healthy running back market in free agency dramatically shifts the landscape. Let's start off with the two big ticket items, including Eagles and running back Saquon Barkley agreeing to a three-year $37.8 million deal. Daigle, surprised by this because it's not typically the Eagles' MO. What was your reaction to seeing Barkley shake out of the Giants and go to the Eagles in the division?
And I'm not sure what got into Howie Roseman to counter the market in terms of bringing along a running back, but clearly given the money that he was handed, it's someone they are very committed to. And the best part is that Saquon Barkley hasn't had issues, even despite struggling in the running game between the tackles, he hasn't had issues earning targets the last 2 years. Not only led the Giants in targets in his first year under Daboll, but even last year, one of only six running backs who recorded at least a 17% target share. So if we think he can still have that role, as Swift did last year with this team. But then also there's this nuance that I'm not hearing many people discuss, and that yes, the tush push probably hangs around. It's the most efficient play in all of football. Mm-hmm. But what if it's even scaled back a hair just because of how much the team plummeted down the stretch, including the no-show playoff loss against the Bucks whenever Jalen Hurts was dealing with that knee injury? Not only that, but without Jason Kelce, like, can this offense do that at the same frequency, at the same efficiency? So I think there's a really high ceiling that's not quite being baked in for Saquon Barkley as well this year.
Oh, I think there's a super high ceiling for Saquon Barkley, but I'm curious just your thoughts on the pass catching part of this, because I mean, how much of this is quarterback? How much of this is the offense that's now changing over here? It's going to be Kellen Moore calling the show here, who's runs a more like traditional offense than what we've seen out of Philadelphia the last couple of years. But again, we talked about this with Ben Solak a few pods ago on the coaching recap one, like how much of what the Eagles have done the last few years is this is what they think Jalen Hurts can do, and how much of it was just they were limited by what Brian Johnson and then even like Shane Steichen, just the skeletons, the ecosystems of those offenses. How much was that the limiting factor? Because typically with a guy like Hurts and in this offense, you're not seeing the running back super involved in the passing right. game, especially when you have real verified dudes to throw to. Because you mentioned the Giants had him lead the team in targets in 2022. You have a pretty big different receiver core between the 2022 yeah. Giants and what the Eagles have in play here.
I do wonder, though, if they spent that amount of money thinking that this is another weapon in the passing game, because even with the great Devonta Smith, A.J. Brown, Dallas Goedert there, it's a team that has been aching for one more weapon, just a yes. little more help. And I do wonder if they think, like, this is our other weapon. We can now just let Smith run freely, A.J. Brown do what he does against man coverage, Dallas Goedert over the middle of the field, but now that underneath option with explosiveness to add Yak, I bet they consider Barkley, like, a weapon to build around underneath in the passing game.
Yeah, and like, is he going to get 90 targets, something like that, that he's had previously? No, like, no. That's not going to happen here. But if he can just be an efficient target getter, I think it's good for, obviously, for fantasy, of course, we want our running backs getting targets. But even for the Eagles offense, like, having that layup option down there in the underneath area is super, should be super critical here. It all just comes back to Jalen Hurts to me. I think this is yet another wrinkle in the, like, can Jalen Hurts evolve discussion here? Because I think the Eagles clearly started running into a wall from an offensive perspective last year. And again, how much of that is the design of the offense? How much is that is the quarterback that they have chosen to invest in? Because I'm with you that I think they probably see this as a way to incentivize, similar to what we've seen the Bills do with Josh Allen, like incentivize mm-hmm. that check down, incentivize like, hey, don't get yourself crushed in, you know, every single game. Bring those legs out when it really matters. But when we're in a game against the damn, ironically, the damn Giants, you know, maybe just check that ball down to Saquon and let him yeah. kind of go to work against his former team. But Daigle, I will use this also as a transition away from Saquon and to Derrick Henry, because these two moves stand out to me as two teams that I'm going to bring it back to a discussion I had with Austin Eckler on the last episode of Eckler's Edge. One of the things I've challenged myself on about like running back value and all that type of stuff is these teams that have uniquely well-built ecosystems that can, and they could probably look at themselves in the mirror and think, hey, we can throw out anybody at the running back position and get like average play, right? You know, mm-hmm. the 49ers, they could feel pretty good. They can throw any running back out there and get average play. But what do? They go out and trade for Christian McCaffrey to weaponize the ecosystem. The Lions, I think they could, they got league high rushing touchdown season from Jamal Williams. Like, no disrespect, but it's Jamal Williams, right? They could probably feel pretty good about who they can throw out there at the running back position. But what do? They go and weaponize the ecosystem and they get Jahmyr Gibbs in there. They spend the 12th overall pick. I kind of think that the Eagles are doing that with Saquon Barkley, and the Ravens are also doing that with Derrick Henry, because the Ravens were third in rushing EPA and rushing success rate last year. But I think they look at that as, yeah, we can get like a good run game with Gus Edwards and Justice Hill and kind of throwing guys at it. But why not try to weaponize that run game with Derrick Henry? I think that might be in the, I don't know if I'm taking too much from this, but I think that might be in the back of the head for both Eric DaCosta and Howie Roseman as they make these two deals.
I believe it benefits everyone, so I agree with you. But just to start with Derrick Henry, we think he's going to get the workload there without Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins in the room, at least right now, since Dobbins still a free agent. And it's a great fit because last year, first year under Todd Monken, the Ravens actually schemed 70% of their running back carries outside the tackle rather than going up the middle, which the Titans have historically done even last year. And on those runs outside the tackle, Derrick Henry averaged 4.5 yards per carry compared to just 3.4 yards per carry up the gut. We need to get him in space, as the Titans mm-hmm. never seem to do, even though we always thought he was good for one 90-yard screen per game. They still just wouldn't feed him targets. So now we have this workhorse who we think is still may have lost a step, but he still has a little bit more in the tank. Not only that, but because he's Derrick Henry and because he garners respect, That's why he had the second most carry against stuffed boxes, 8+ defenders last year. Because he garners that respect, the big takeaway for me is that this makes life even easier in the passing game for Lamar Jackson, because you have to cover Henry now. So what happens whenever we get Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely? Hopefully they go out and make one more signing at receiver. What happens if we can now hopefully project for more man coverage for Lamar Jackson, one-on-one coverage to make this game easier for him? That seems like an offense that could be even more potent than last year's version.
Yeah, again, that's just like weaponizing the run game in a different sense too, where you're getting the coverage looks that you want. So I loved the Henry move. I'm with you that just having Lamar Jackson in there creates space, but they did a good job creating space for their running backs last year anyways. And that is like, you must do that for Derrick Henry at this point. And really, like, at any point in his career, you want him to get that head of steam. You want to get that like big dreadlock ponytail thing. You want to get that flowing in space there for Derrick Henry. So I feel great about this move. Just brass tacks fantasy perspective, like, where do you see yourself wanting to draft Derrick Henry? Because I can already tell I am going to get really excited about this move come, you know, when normal people, well-adjusted people like you and I actually are going to start drafting.
We're enjoying the sun right now. It's okay. Again, I'm still trying to figure it out because we haven't even talked about what the overarching ecosystem of fantasy football looks like this year. But honestly, when you look at the running back tiers, it is Christian McCaffrey because he's the only player that gets that type of usage. And then we can get into the Breece Halls, Kyren Williams of the worlds. But besides that, we will be talking about who are we taking between like Gus Edwards and DeAndre Swift types, right? Even someone like a Keaton Mitchell, who is now drowned out most likely by Derrick Henry. But if you offer pop, just like James Cook, Rashad White last year, you do offer value from the seventh, eighth round on, because it's the way the running back landscape has shifted now. There are no guarantees. There are no more workhorses. Although I think we're about to talk about one workhorse and shift for one organization, but that's what the ecosystem is going to be in drafting running backs now. So I can't say right now I'll have too much, but that's not really even about hating Derrick Henry. I think it will be more about trying to lash on to high target share elite receivers at the top and then piling on running backs towards the end, given that there are no more workhorses, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm sort of in we'll see mode with Derrick Henry too, and I'm super curious to see where he actually goes in drafts. Let's move on to what I would say was the most surprising running back move of free agency so far, and that was that the Packers and Josh Jacobs agreed to a 4-year, $48 million funny money deal, by the way. It's basically, when you actually look at it, it's a year-to-year contract, but whatever. 4-year, $48 million, whatever the agent wants us to say here. They sign him to that deal. They turn around and release Aaron Jones, who goes on to sign a 1-year, $7 million deal with the Minnesota Vikings. I didn't see the Packers. I thought they might add to the running back room because Aaron Jones can still ball. Like, he was awesome his last five games, averaged over 5.6 yards per carry in those five games. I thought they'd add some help, though, so that the drop off from Aaron Jones to AJ Dillon and all those other guys wasn't so steep. I did not see a full remake of the running back room happening for the Green Bay Packers, John Daigle.
And it's the reverse spectrum of last year, because by the time I arrived to Vegas for the high stakes drafts, by that time, Josh Jacobs in those types of leagues with professional fantasy football players was a third, fourth round guy. But in home leagues, as everyone recalls, he was still going in the first round, even though he should not have, given the curse of 290 touches. What it looks like, even historically, whenever a running back reaches 290 plus touches and then has to wear that on their bones the following season. And that's exactly what happened. Josh Jacobs was not efficient at all. He was obsolete in terms of explosiveness compared to the year prior, and he finishes the RB18 in points per game, despite being that first-round selection we should have faded. Now the pendulum has swung the opposite direction, where everyone's gotten a little bit sharper, so I don't think we're necessarily going to get like a vast reaction. People will probably still be high on Josh Jacobs, just given the negligent competition of the room there is in Green Bay right now. But overall, it's a player I do want to be higher on, simply for touches and target equity, because where else are they going to go? They haven't trusted anyone else outside of Aaron Jones. And again, they just let him walk. So I can't imagine anyone coming for Josh Jacobs' workload, which always helps, as we know, a running back in fantasy.
And I'm with you. I really think I'm going to find myself gravitating to Josh Jacobs in fantasy because he's a little younger than some of these other guys. He did get a lot of work that season, but from like a workload perspective, that was kind of an outlier. He hasn't amassed like, you know, certainly Derrick Henry level touch. Derrick Henry's touched the ball over 1,600 times since 2019. Josh Jacobs was in the league. It just came to the league in 2019. So I think that part of it is appealing to me. The overall offensive ecosystem is appealing to me in Green Bay. Like, I want to be investing in this offense because I'm very excited about Jordan Love. I really like Matt LaFleur as a play caller. I think Matt LaFleur is going to have a lot of fun with Josh Jacobs from a run game design perspective, because in Jacobs' 2022 season, he was obviously great on those like man gap power runs that the Raiders were kind of sort of leaning into that year, but also his rushing success rate on zone runs was really high as well. So he can do a little bit of everything, can Josh Jacobs. So that part I think is going to be exciting for LaFleur. And I think it just, like, you see 4 years, $48 million for a running back, and you kind of freak out, but got to remember too that the Packers are not paying anybody else really on offense. This is such a young team that I think they can afford to look at it that way, that, yeah, we can throw some money at Josh Jacobs on a year-to-year deal because all of our receivers are on rookie contracts for the foreseeable future right now.
I'm so curious, too, about this offense in year two of this project, because I do think they're going to be fun. Quarterbacks nowadays, like, you know, not only should every team try to shuffle for like the next Patrick Mahomes or at least an elite one all the time, but you really look for, can you handle being off script? And there are a lot of good quarterbacks who I still fear will like never ultimately get there because off script they struggle. Tua, Jared Goff, for example.
Yep.
Jordan Love, like at least in the second half of the season, thrived off script. The dude welcomed chaos and embraced
it. Yeah, he did.
And so it's such a that second half of the season, the thing is, it was such a heater. It was a Joe Flacco Super Bowl winning level type of heater that I'm like, okay, who is this guy? Because we don't even know what the median outcome for it. Is he Aaron Rodgers or is he like a league average quarterback? We have no idea. So I'm interested to see that. I'm interested to see if there's a Josh Jacobs bounce back since, again, he was a monster 2 seasons ago. And then, of course, Christian Watson should be their leading receiver, but who is he given his chronic hamstring injury? So there are a lot of question marks that I think it's going to be fun in the end, but I want to see how Matt LaFleur dissects it all.
All right. The first two running backs that were signed when the legal negotiating period opened was DeAndre Swift and Tony Pollard. DeAndre Swift signed with agreed to terms with the Bears on a 3-year, $24.5 million deal. And Tony Pollard agreed with the Titans on a 3-year, $24 million deal. So pretty similar. Those guys from a guaranteed money and like a per year perspective, they beat out Miles Sanders at the top of, remember Miles Sanders signed a big free agent deal with the Carolina Panthers last year? My God. These guys beat out that deal. Let me tell you what, man, I did not see either of those landing spots coming, although I thought the Bears needed running back help. I didn't see these two teams being a match for these two running backs, nor did I see these two guys being the first running back dominoes to fall in free agency. Do either of these two landing spots get you jazzed up?
Was thoroughly confused as well, especially because the Bears are essentially trading Deontay Foreman for DeAndre Swift. Two entirely different types of players. Now, for fantasy, I would still be in on DeAndre Swift because I think we forget that even someone like Ramondre Stevenson is older than Swift. Swift is still going to be 25 years old this entire season. He's still so young and the type of archetype and explosive player we want to target. Even last year, despite being constantly taken off the field because it was the funniest thing. I felt bad for him, but he legitimately ran to some type of force field on the 1 yard line. He was given so many opportunities before they plugged Jalen Hurts in, and he would just fall backwards from this invisible wall and get taken off from those touchdowns. But even then, the RB24 and PPR points per game, the 8th highest target share among running backs as well. So while it cancels out with Roschon Johnson's best ability, at the same time, I still want to be on a young, explosive player like Swift, despite the odd fit. And for Tony Pollard, I'm not sure yet I have a grasp of how Brian Callahan envisioned this offense, because we know, although it was off target a lot, it was quite wild. Will Levis, if we think they're moving forward with him, does have one of the most powerful arms in the league. Even so, he targeted running backs when he was in for those games at the 8th highest rate in his starts. So do they envision now both Tajay Spears and Tony Pollard as big parts implementing of this receiving game, or are they going to go out and also add some more pieces in the free agency? That's the oddest one to me, because as we talked about earlier, the ecosystem of running back for fantasy football, like week to week, I can see both of these individuals being headaches, but at the same time, they're both the type of player I still want to target because I know they can get there weekly and they can dominate if one or the other loses touch share for whatever reason or is absent. So I can imagine being in on both Spears and Pollard, similar to the poor man's version of Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery last year.
They feel very overlap in terms of skill set.
Yeah.
Like it just, and that part's tough for me. Like, I think I could have gotten myself to be in on Pollard this year, you know, on a new team, a little healthier. And I think I could have definitely gotten myself into being an investor in Tajay Spears this year. I think I'm going to struggle a little bit with these guys together on the same team, but that remains to be seen. The Swift one. Yeah. I your points about Swift are actually well taken. I think he's kind of a frustrating running back, but he definitely is a guy that could be, he fits in that archetype of what we're looking for yeah. fantasy. And I certainly think he's going to get more passing volume than he got in Philadelphia. The Joe Mixon era is over in Cincinnati. The Bengals trade Joe Mixon to the Texans and then promptly, this is how this went down. Monday night, it's reported that the Bengals are going to release Joe Mixon. And then they agree to terms with Zach Moss on a 2-year, $8 million deal, which basically tells you that the Bengals were willing to save $6 million by cutting Joe Mixon and then sending just a little over $4 million this year to Zach Moss. So that kind of shows you that they see those guys as close. But then the Houston Texans come in on Tuesday morning and they trade what ends up being a 7th-round pick to the Cincinnati Bengals to get Joe Mixon. So Moss to the Bengals, Mixon out of Cincinnati and with the Houston Texans, which was probably, Daigle, the most attractive landing spot for a running back all offseason, really.
And Joe Mixon practically lucked into the opportunity. And that's exactly what it is, because it doesn't bode well that Damian Pierce in his second year with a new winning regime, mind you, whenever push came to shove and they were in the most important games of the season, in those two playoff games, Pierce played 6 offensive snaps to 4 special team snaps. Not a great outlook for year 3. So we would think that despite how we imagine Joe Mixon's explosiveness and how little he's shown in that department the last couple of years, last year especially, we still think he's going to be an every touch running back with CJ Stroud, who raises all tides. Like, you can even get excited about Noah Brown again this year just because Stroud is the one throwing to him. So yes, I can imagine catching a dip on Joe Mixon pending where his ADP shakes out at.
Yeah, Joe Mixon ranked 8th among 23 running backs with 200 plus carries in zone rushing success rate last season, according to Fantasy Points data. And that's important because that is that was the big thing with Damian Pierce. He wasn't a system fit with this current Houston Texans offense. So I think that one's important. His zone rushing success rate is actually much better than his power man rushing success rate, at least last year. So that one is certainly important when we look at Joe Mixon. I joked on Twitter that Zach Moss is going to be every fantasy analyst's like favorite, you know, sleeper running back pick or whatever. And then immediately the real hipsters hit me up and were like, nah, actually Chase Brown's going to beat him out or whatever. So how do you project this backfield going in Cincinnati?
It is unfortunate because Zach Moss basically had 2 seasons. The one where he earned as many, if not more, touches than Jonathan Taylor. Because in the first half of the year when JT was out, he was quite literally one of the most explosive backs in the league. In that span, only Christian McCaffrey had more runs that gained 10-plus yards. Unfortunately, though, when JT suffered another injury in the back half of the year, Zach Moss became the Moss that led him to Indianapolis, the one that made him a journeyman across the league, because there was nothing there. He was very gassed. I don't know if there was an injury behind the scenes, but I don't know if it was the amount of touches that they had put on him in the first half without JT, but he wasn't the same player at all. So he's definitely someone I'm going to be interested in sprinkling in. I will once again take both of them, especially because we saw what Chase Brown could be at the end of the year, just those pop every time he touched the ball. But overall, I don't know genuinely if we have a winning back in the system. I think they pretty much use 2 guys again.
Yeah, just one note between these two guys. Zach Moss graded out as the 10th best running back on true pass blocking sets last season, according to Pro Football Focus, whereas Joe Mixon has lost, you know, snaps on third down for years. He was 66th out of 74 qualifying backs. That's been an issue for him for years in that Cincinnati offense. So I think they see that positive with Zach Moss there, in addition to just being a solid runner. Elsewhere, Yahoo Fantasy Football podcast host Austin Eckler signs with the Commanders on a 2-year deal worth up to, my favorite phrase of the offseason, up to $11.43 million. I mean, hey, he's following me back east, buddy. What I literally joked about that with him on the podcast, the first episode last year. Like, yeah, I'm moving to Virginia. First thing we hear is Austin Eckler requests a trade last year. Where are you trying to get traded to? The Commanders? You can't leave me alone. Well, he ends up in the Commanders a little bit less than 365 days later.
It is also Cliff Kingsbury's scheme that featured running backs close to the line of scrimmage. And as I'm sure y'all have discussed in the past, we can pretty much write off his performance last year due to that ankle sprain that very clearly limited him for the entire year. So it's a season where we talk about, you know, getting players on discounts in fantasy football. Maybe that's not Josh Jacobs. It's definitely not going to be Derrick Henry, depending how sharp your room is. You are absolutely going to get a discount on Austin Eckler. And it's one I truly believe in, given that I just want to write off last year entirely.
Yeah, I think you can write off last year. I definitely think he makes for a nice compliment to Brian Robinson. Like, Brian Robinson's that hammerhead in the backfield there. And I'm glad you brought that up, because for as much as we justifiably dog Cliff Kingsbury's passing game designs, they did often have some pretty good run games in Arizona when he was the offensive play caller / head coach.
Kingsbury made Chase Edmonds viable. So I imagine both Robinson and Eckler are going to do quite well, regardless how the entire offense shakes out with what we assume will be a rookie quarterback.
Two little other running back signings here before we move on. Giants and Devin Singletary agree to a 3-year, $16.5 million deal. And the Chargers reunite Greg Roman and Gus Edwards on a 2-year deal. Either one of these get you. I mean, I can't believe Devin Singletary getting 3-year deals out here in this running back market.
He was really good, though, last year for the Texans. Again, it probably is a case of everyone trying to just figure out how to defend CJ Stroud anyways. But he took the job from Damian Pierce. He didn't start out that way. He literally earned that role at the end of the year. So good for Devin Singletary. Much like some other backs we've talked about, like a Josh Jacobs, but a lesser version, there's no competition in New York right now for Singletary. So I imagine he'll be argued as a low-end RB2 based on the volume. Gus Edwards is kind of exciting because on one hand, we can all just go ahead and pencil Blake Corum to Jim Harbaugh on day two. It's just too easy to figure out. But also, Gus Edwards with Greg Roman, remember, it's 4 seasons, and he never finished with less than 5 yards per carry. He's been explosive for his entire career in Roman's running scheme. So he's definitely a player who I think has immense touchdown upside, perhaps even 15 touchdowns in this offense with Justin Herbert. So I can definitely see targeting Edwards despite his his lack of pass-catching ability.
Yeah, not only did they sign Gus Edwards to the Chargers, they also signed Will Disley on a 3-year deal, because the previous Chargers regime featured one of the most unserious tight end rooms I've ever seen from a run blocking perspective the last 2 years. And this current Chargers regime is like, no, we're not doing that. We're getting a big back in Gus Edwards. We're getting a big blocking tight end in Will Disley. So we can definitely expect the Chargers to be rather high on the rushing play perspective next year.
It also finally separates the Seahawks tight ends room, because forever we wanted to draft them, but we couldn't because it was 3 heads. Now it's 1 guy again, and the guy we're most excited about too.
Oh, baby. Noah Fant season definitely coming here pretty soon. All right, we're going to take a quick break. After we get back, we're going to talk some wide receiver moves, other major moves of free agency right after this. All right, number 4 storyline here, John Daigle. The Browns continue their creative approach with distressed asset wide receivers. The Broncos traded wide receiver Jerry Jeudy to the Cleveland Browns for a 5th and 6th round draft pick. I'm not the biggest Jerry Jeudy guy in the world, but I do like the fact that Cleveland has now amassed a wide receiver trio of Jerry Jeudy, Amari Cooper, and Elijah Moore for 2 5th round picks. a sixth rounder, and a move back from the second to the third round. Considering what other teams pay for this position, again, I'm not the biggest Judy guy in the world. That's not bad.
Not bad at all. My concern is that with Jameis Winston signed as their backup, that does guarantee now, I'm going to use the word guarantee, that Joe Flacco won't be back. And the issue is that, can Deshaun Watson support 2-3 receivers? Can he carry Amari Cooper, David Njoku, and even someone I believe is more than a slot receiver in Jerry Jeudy? Perhaps he's not that, but I still think he's capable of doing more. But right now, the issue is that Deshaun Watson completing just 60% of his passes in his career with the Browns, he hasn't been for two seasons now the guy he was in Houston. And so I just don't know, honestly, if it matters for Jerry Jeudy, who is a one-year rental. I do think in terms of market evaluation, like if we look at what receivers like Darnell Mooney, for example, $26 million guaranteed received, and then you look at the Browns basically, if you imagine it as if they paid for a wide receiver, they gave Jeudy a one-year $12 million deal. Again, I think business-wise, it's an amazing move. I just don't know if there's any value there behind Cooper and Njoku.
No, I don't think so at all. Especially because, like, I still think Elijah Moore's a pretty good player. I don't know that he's, you know, a guy that's going to be a fantasy factor or anything like that. But, like, that's four guys we're talking about here. We're talking about Cooper, we're talking about Njoku, and then I think a distant third and fourth is going to be, you know, Moore or Jeudy. And you could put those guys in either order, in my opinion. And that's a lot for a team with a quarterback question. Like, typically, I'm not trying to go that far down the target pecking order for a team that I don't trust the overall environment. And I do trust Kevin Stefanski as an offensive designer and play caller, but I don't trust Deshaun Watson. Like, nothing that he's shown in a Cleveland Browns uniform has shown you that you should trust him. And I on top of that, I already think Jerry Jeudy I've been lower than consensus on him. He's a very volatile player, overrated as a route runner. So he's already got to get his career together in general. And then there's all these other environmental questions. I do not think this is a place where I'm going to be really trying to draft a lot of players in fantasy.
I completely agree with you.
Number five storyline. Oh man, you got to love when somebody just is who they are. And Trent Baalke and his Jacksonville Jaguars continue to shop in free agency for pass catchers. The Jaguars and wide receiver Gabe Davis agreed to a 3-year, $39 million deal. They also sign wide receiver Devin Duvernay, who's mostly a special teamer kick returner, to a 2-year deal. As of right now, we're recording this around 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. They are trying to re-sign Calvin Ridley. I read those reports and I think they're trying to wait till Wednesday when free agency opens to sign him to a deal, because then they only send a third, not a second, back to the Falcons. I think the Patriots are trying like hell to get Calvin Ridley to come to their team, but I think ultimately he wants to go back to Jacksonville. They want him to come back. I think that's probably what he should do. Shoot. Certainly that's what he should do if these are the two landing spots here. I'll say this, Daigle. It seems like a lot for Gabe Davis, but if they bring back Ridley, the Gabe Davis move actually makes a lot more sense.
That's exactly where my head is at. Gabe Davis, Calvin Ridley, and Christian Kirk is sexy. But if Baalke is simply trying to get discounted...
Sexy-ish, I don't know. So to me, it's like it's sexy-ish. Like it's fair. It's all right. Like it's good. I'd like better. They've spent a lot of money for like a pretty good receiver room, if this is the room.
That was always my argument last year whenever a lot of people were championing and celebrating Evan Ingram recording a catch record for tight ends. And I was like, yeah, like look at the Jaguars offense. It makes sense tight end like set a record here. That's not a great thing. But if Baalke is, and what I think he's doing, unfortunately, is trying to get Calvin Ridley for cheap, it makes sense if you look on the paper at least. Like, You know Calvin Ridley, third most go routes last year, fly routes. It's unfortunately how they used him frequently whenever Zay Jones was available. Gabe Davis, a deep threat, finished sixth in go routes as well. 24% of Ridley's targets came 20 yards downfield. 32% of Davis's targets came in that range. He's trying to just add another deep threat. And again, if Ridley's on the other side, it makes it a little more fun. But if it's just Gabe Davis, it is certainly concerning that it is definitely a downgrade for Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, if it's just Gabe Davis, I don't love it. But if they're signing Gabe Davis, who, look, is a painfully limited player, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, he is a guy that is not a separator. In reception perception, he's never cleared 64% success rate versus man. He's never cleared 65% success rate versus press. Like, these are last year, he actually had his lowest that I've charted success rate versus man and press coverage last year. Like, I mean, he is just not a separator. He shouldn't be like a clear cut number two receiver, but he can play the X receiver role and he can burn downfield. And he's actually, I think, to give him some credit, he's gotten pretty good at like improvisational routes, you know, working with Josh Allen when he scrambles, he can make himself available. I think the best place for Gabe Davis is probably Josh Allen's offense there in Buffalo. So like, from an individual production standpoint, I don't really even care about Gabe Davis, but the fact that they have somebody that they can put in that X receiver role and have and rip downfield, like win on those nine routes, win on those corner routes, win on the post routes, deep outs, stuff like that. Because that was the frustrating part about Calvin Ridley, is they just kept using him at that X receiver spot, never motioning him around. So if they sign Gabe Davis, which I think is, again, it's just rich to be like, all right, we need an X, let's just go get Gabe Davis. Then if they put him in that role, that allows Ridley to play flanker. It allows him to move around pre-snap. It can actually open up a lot more things for him. So again, if they're able to retain Ridley, I think the Gabe Davis thing, like, I can see where they're going with it, even if I wouldn't probably have personally greenlit the deal. But if it's just Gabe Davis and Christian Kirk and Zay Jones and Evan Engram, like, I don't like this offense at all.
And I could see myself once again adding him, but it's like the old cliche, better in best ball, just because the spike weeks, as we know, in start-sit leagues is consistently a headache. It's as if you're drafting MBS just eight rounds earlier. So if it's no Calvin Ridley, we're probably projecting, again, the same thing, the same guy that even Doug Peterson mentioned for Ridley as a positive, Ridley being able to draw flags downfield. Like, that's not while you're paying a guy three years, $39 million. Just get down there and bring them closer to line of scrimmage via a yellow piece of cloth. So hopefully it does not become that.
I don't know how I feel about the Jacksonville Jaguars right now. Like, just their trajectory as a team and as a franchise. Which
don't look at their defense or offensive line.
No, right. That's the thing. We're gonna sit here and be like, this Gabe Davis thing. They got bigger fish to fry there in Jacksonville. That's for sure. All right, number six storyline: playoff teams make obvious re-signings. The Chiefs retain Chris Jones on a 5-year, $158.8 million deal. Shout out to Chris Jones for getting the bag. Michael Pittman re-signs with the Colts, 3 years, $70 million deal. Right about kind of what I expected. Baker Mayfield goes back to the Bucks on what I think, Daigle, we can officially call the like middle class quarterback contract in the NFL. 3-year, $100 million deal for Baker to go back to Tampa. These three signings make complete sense to me. Anything kind of stand out to you in terms of these three teams?
My two biggest questions.
By the way, Colts weren't a playoff team. They were a fringe playoff team last year, right? They were one game away from the
They had
the
a top three coach of the year candidate. Someone who 100%. Like literally showed, because I did have major questions about him, but someone who Shane Steichen literally showed he can call an offense regardless of who he has under center, at running back and at wide receiver. So that was very promising in year one. My two biggest question marks for that group, though, are for Michael Pittman. It's such a small sample, but he was a different player in those four games with Anthony Richardson. His depth of target, as you can imagine, was also much lower in terms of 6.5 yards per target. He had two catches in those four games. He had two games with one catch. He had three catches for 18 yards in another. He did go over 90 yards with a touchdown in one of them, but I do wonder if he's the same ceiling player since Gardner Minshew was just launching it with volume to him in the back half of the year. And then for Baker Mayfield, I'm happy he got paid. I cheer for players. But who is he without Dave Canales, who basically resurrected his career because he taught him, or he schemed the correct plays whenever Mayfield was under pressure, because Canales is an intuitive offensive guru. Is Baker Mayfield like the same player? Did he improve in that department since he's always been poor in his career under pressure? I wonder who he is now without Canales.
Yeah, like Dave Canales to me, he got it. You know, like he was a good play call. You could see that. You could feel that as you're watching the Bucs offense last year. I don't know that I can say the same thing about Liam Cohen, who at least has some familiarity with Baker because he was the offensive coordinator in that weird 2022 Rams season when Mayfield, you know, got there in 5 seconds and then played a damn game on Thursday night against the Raiders. So there's at least some synergy there. But overall, this is what they had to do, right? They had to bring back Mayfield. They had to bring back Mike Evans and all these guys together. Number seven storyline: Daigle, I'm not saying this to be mean. It's going to sound mean when I say it, when I just read off the storyline, which is like, what are the Raiders? I don't mean that to be mean, because I'm kind of like, I'm trying to figure out the Raiders, and I want you to maybe help me with this, because the Raiders and Christian Wilkins, who was probably just like the best other, you know, Kirk Cousins, obviously unique situation because he's a quarterback, but I think like guys that could have been franchise tagged, maybe should have been franchise tagged if the Dolphins had their books together, Wilkins was the best guy really on the open market. He and the Raiders agree on a 4-year, $110 million deal, and the Raiders, the aforementioned Gardner Minshew, they agree with him on a 2-year, $25 million deal that includes $15 million fully guaranteed. I'm like, people saying, all right, Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew are going to compete for the starting job. Like, no, they're not. I've already tried and failed to not get gaslit by this, but I've already done it. Already tweeted about it. Big mistake. But again, what, like, just Daigle, what are the Raiders? Because they've got some good players. Like, Wilkins joining Max Crosby, that seems pretty fun on defense. They've got like the pieces in place there, I think, to build an interesting unit. On offense, they have Davante Adams, they have Jacoby Myers, but like, is Gardner Minshew really going to start games for this team this year? Like, what are the Las Vegas Raiders?
It wasn't just adding Christian Wilkins too. Remember, without Wilkins, last year, whenever Antonio Pierce took over, they finished the year as the fantasy defense number one overall. Like, they were just hard-nosed, playing their asses off for Antonio Pierce. And I hope it works out. We've seen this storyline a lot where a coach comes in is hard nose. I will say Antonio Pierce is at least a player's coach. Everyone, including Max Crosby, who is arguably the most important player in that room, was championing him to bring him back, and they got him. So I hope it works out for Antonio Pierce. But what this offense is, I don't know, because it sounds like it will be a true competition between Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. I don't know if we know enough, or maybe we know it all, what both those guys are. That's also not a good thing, playing with Davante Adams. So I think they're going to be exactly what they showed over the last month of the season when they ran into a favorable schedule and could afford to lead the league in run play rate from a neutral game script, whenever Zamir White was averaging 23 touches per game over the last month. But really the question is, what happens if this offense can't do that? What do they do then? And a lot of times offenses that aren't built to, you know, sustain and actually come back, those are the ones that just fluster down the stretch. So right now, I don't know what their identity is outside of playing good defense and running the ball. And again, how often does that really hold up nowadays?
It can't. And part of me just thinks this team is screaming for, we move up the draft board and get a quarterback.
Yes.
But we said that about Minnesota, you know, and not everybody's going to be able to get to do it. And you can really tell, you know, a lot of smart people have said this. I've said this on the show before. You can tell like who watched the games last year based on what they say about Gardner Minshew. Cause he was, he's fine. He's like perfectly acceptable quarterback, but he tries to throw the game away a lot for the Colts last year. He's not a guy that you can just, in my opinion, like if I'm a fan of a team and my team is just walking into the season with Gardner Minshew as the clear cut starter, I'm like, thank you for letting me know. I don't have to take you seriously for a whole calendar year. That's great. So, again, this is a team that's just screaming for a real plan at quarterback. It's just tough to see where that comes from at this point.
I haven't sorted Gardner Minshew's turnover worthy rate on Pro Football Focus anytime lately, but I would imagine if we sorted it, it has to be top two, top three, because it was a constant game of Gardner Minshew was putting up good stats and coming back because of what Gardner Minshew did in the first half of games.
Solid backup, good backup. We don't need him starting many
games. We don't need too much.
We don't need too much Gardner. Tell you what, the Rams, they've got a lot going on. They've got maybe too much beef on their offensive line. Daigle, we got to talk about some blockers here. The Rams added some beef here in the free agency period. They re-signed guard Kevin Dotson and signed Lions guard Jonah Jackson for a combined $99 million. Andrew Siciliano, in response to a lot of the reports out of this, which is that Steve Avila is going to move to center. He was a guard they drafted last year, so that Jackson can start a left guard and Kevin Dotson can resume his position as the right guard. Siciliano points out that the Rams aren't messing around on the interior offensive line. Sean McVay wants to maul you. That's nearly 1,000 pounds of push in the run game. Left guard Jonah Jackson weighs in at 311. Steve Avila, the center, weighs 332. You don't see that from a center very often. And Kevin Dotson weighs in at 321 pounds. The Rams also signed Colby Parkinson to a three-year deal as well, tight end there. The Rams are going to run the ball. And I mean, that if you want Kyren Williams to succeed, you got to feel pretty good that they're just going to run back that exact sort of duo man power run scheme that we saw them succeed with last year.
We'll see how the draft goes, but historically, Sean McVay has leaned on and featured one running back. And right now, as he showed last year, that is very clearly Kyren Williams. So he should be a top three running back alongside Christian McCaffrey and Breece Hall on everyone's rankings. And it's just funny because it is a departure from what the Rams have done under last Dean Sean McVay historically. Like, you just go back to 2 years ago when they won the Super Bowl and they really weren't trying to do anything on the offensive line. They were just shuffling guys and said, we can figure that out. But now they've turned into this, what we think will be a hard-nosed running team. Even Kevin Dotson recorded PFF's highest run blocking grade among every single guard in the league last year. So to invest capital in that and say, we're going to start learning to play a new way. Not only that, but remember, whenever DeMarcus Robinson, oddly enough, who they re-signed for a one-year, $5 million deal. Whenever DeMarcus Robinson joined this rotation and that became their three wide sets and he played over Tutu Atwell in the second half of the year, including the playoff game, his target share from the great Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, they were literally all just 5 percentage points within each other. They were all featured parts of the offense. DeMarcus Robinson was leading them in end zone targets in the second half of the year. So what a quirky, weird offense that I think found some things and were one of the best units in the league, honestly. They just happened to lose to the Lions because of McVay's, unfortunately, play calling and decision making at the end of the game, which is also why he then went out and hired an analyst for short down decision making. So McVay also trying to... fill in his weaknesses already this offseason.
Yeah, I'm really excited to watch the Rams offense. Both because I love those pass catchers, but man, the way they are like changing their identity midstream, not only, and we talk about it's a lot on the podcast, that this is a very different structure of the run game than they used to be that zone. I mean, zone blocking guys are, you're never going to have a 330-pound center if you're doing a lot of zone running, okay? This is a very specific thing that they're building here. Can't wait to see it. Very excited about Kyren Williams in fantasy.
One more shout out too, because for a team that also historically had just traded all their picks away, like they had such a great draft last year. Everyone, of course, knows Puka Nacua, but as you mentioned, Steve Avila is a monster in the middle. Kobe Durant, Byron Young, they're just amazing defensive stalwarts that they just got right last year. So they're clearly doing something correct over there.
Number nine storyline: the Carolina Panthers are trying. Emphasis on trying, trying to find their way back to normalcy. They made a lot of moves the last few days. They tried to add some beef here as well. Panthers and guard Robert Hunt agree on a 5-year, $100 million deal. They also signed Damian Lewis of Seattle to a 4-year, $40 million deal. And of course, the big news is they traded Brian Burns to the Giants for a second and a fifth rounder. Even country music superstar Luke Combs is tweeting at the Panthers in fury about the fact that they have not gotten a first round pick back for Christian McCaffrey and Brian Burns. I mean, you've upset Luke Combs now. I mean, he literally wrote in one of his songs, "Diamond rings and football teams have torn this boy apart." The Carolina Panthers, you've torn Luke Combs apart. They're trying to clearly build on the offensive line, which is great. These guys are maulers. Dave Canales said at the combine he wants to show you how stubborn he could be in the run game. But, you know, man, I'm still struggling. The Burns thing is tough to swallow. It's kind of like old history that they could have gotten a first and two firsts and a second maybe from the Rams at the trade deadline a couple of years ago. But, man, it just the offensive line signings at least have me interested in Carolina.
Luke Combs and Josh Norris, the two people we should check on every day to see how our friends are doing. I think for me, the one question mark I really have is just...
Who do you think is a better hang, Luke Combs or Josh Norris?
As someone who's hung with Josh Norris, definitely Luke Combs, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. 100% same.
Probably a bit more lively. But for me, the one thing I'll be watching is, like Canales remaking Baker Mayfield, as we talked about, can he save Bryce Young? Because... From a clean pocket, when Bryce Young is not under pressure, he has layups. He finished dead last in the league in yards per attempt. not a good thing. So that is the one thing I will be interested to see. Also, again, just adding anyone else in the mix.
They do need to get better on the offensive line. That was a must. They obviously, I've seen some people say like, oh, they're building the guard positions up, you know, just like Drew Brees had with the New Orleans Saints. These guys are probably going to be a little more beneficial in the run game. I'm just not sure. Like, are we running back the Miles Sanders, Chuba Hubbard committee from last year? I mean, I guess so.
It seems that way, which is odd, but would also make me higher on Chuba Hubbard. The funny thing is, though, like, that's the issue with last year. There's so many splits that, you know, again, we have 6 months or whatever to talk about this. There's no need to dive into in detail yet. But just like Zach Moss, Chuba Hubbard suffered the same consequences in that he earned the job. But then when he got the starting job post bye, he was the guy that like didn't earn the. He played like Miles Sanders. And so it's like, okay, where did this player that was actually explosive go in the back half of the year? But right now, yes, it does look like at least Hubbard will be the one who leads him touches.
Panthers also signed Josie Jewell, linebacker from the Denver Broncos, who has connection with Ishiro Evero, the defensive coordinator. Yep. There you go. Boom. Hang the banner now. Finally, our 10th storyline. The Patriots are first day spenders once again. The Patriots signed Jacoby Brissett to a 1-year, $8 million deal. Antonio Gibson, another shocker of the first day of free agency, 3-year, $11.3 million deal. They also brought back Kendrick Bourne on a 3-year deal and Hunter Henry on a 3-year deal. So talk about hang the banner, Daigle. I mean, look, the Patriots, I don't want to make jokes because they needed people. I mean, just straight up warm bodies on offense is what they needed. I like Brissett as a signing here because you can go with the rookie and he can be the mentor. Or like, whereas I said that, you know, Gardner Minshew, I don't really think I can take you seriously. Like, I can take a team seriously with Jacoby Brissett as the starting quarterback here. So I like that one. The other three moves, again, we just needed to get players on this offense.
And much like the splits we have from Drake London, we talked about and how they're going to be vastly different, we assume, this year. I'll never forget that last year, whenever Jacoby Brissett started coming off the bench for those last three games, like Terry McLaurin would do nothing from Sam Howell because the Howell juice had run its course by the last month. But then Brissett would come in and just ruin every prop I bet under on because he actually came off the bench with all the flair in the world, had shown he can still play in stints. So I think it's a good position to back up who we assume will be a rookie quarterback they'll take with one of the top three picks. And then for Hunter Henry and the rest of these players, Henry's at least one of those guys I continue, even stubbornly, getting excited about for best ball leagues at least. Again, season long, we're talking about week-to-week viability. Not really the situation where I'm targeting him, but in best ball, the fact that even last year, 4 top 5 finishes, so like actually a tie-in with a ceiling because in every season he's played with New England, he's finished with double-digit red zone targets. He led them in end zone targets last year, the entire team. So still a player I think has a ceiling that you don't want to be able to like choose the week-to-week nonsense. Just draft in best ball and be done with it. Kendrick Bourne right now, after the release of Devontae Parker, who also just signed with the Eagles, Kendrick Bourne is their number one receiver. Technically. So I would imagine somewhere in the mix, we get one or two receivers added as well.
Yeah, they're pushing to sign Calvin Ridley, like I mentioned earlier. They might, you know, I don't know. I think they should kick around Marquise Brown, who also maybe could sign with the Titans. There's a lot that's still happening here with free agency. But a couple cleanups. Yeah,
redundancy, though, too, much like DeAndre Swift, where like Antonio Gibson matches the profile essentially of Ramondre Stevenson. So it's just so odd to think that's who they thought they should add to the mix rather than another like Damien Harris type of player.
Does it make you nervous about Stevenson like as a fantasy pick next year?
He still finished third in target share among all running backs. Like he showed that ability. He can still and I understand like it was far and few between, but there was still a month there where he was explosive too. So I don't know about worrisome. Again, given the landscape of the position, it's kind of just becoming where we have to still target him because we know what he's capable of, at least as a receiver.
Exactly. Right. Like if you thought he was going to be a workhorse back, like I don't know what to tell you. That's just not who he's going to be. He even said he doesn't want to be that player at one point last year. I do think Gibson is a curious fit just for all the reasons you mentioned, like a little bit of that overlap there. But, again, they just needed players on offense in New England. A few other cleanup signings here. Browns, Jameis Winston agree on a 1-year deal. You mentioned that earlier. Commanders and Marcus Mariota agree on a 1-year deal. That makes me think Sam Howell's available for trade. Tight end Mike Gesicki to a one-year deal with the Cincinnati Bengals. Noah Fant, you mentioned that as well. 2 years, $21 million back with the Seahawks. And the Bears are giving tight end Gerald Everett a 2-year, $12 million base value deal. Daigle, any of those moves stick out to you as something we should care about?
Noah Fant, much like my argument for DeAndre Swift at value, Noah Fant, I believe he's only 26 years old, 7 catches of 20 plus yards last year. So explosiveness in a pinch. And now again, whereas they previously used 3 tight ends, it's not the Pete Carroll regime. Pete Carroll's assisting from the background, but perhaps they don't want to feature like every single tight end in the book anymore. They're not going to prioritize him in the first 3 rounds of the draft. Maybe it is just young Noah Fant getting to do what he does. So I am kind of excited about Noah Fant, honestly.
And like, call me a sicko, but I'm at least intrigued by the Mike Gesicki Cincinnati Bengals pairing here. Yeah, I think that sure was the right way to
I think Irv Smith spurned us all.
But like, they're kind of 1-for-2 in the like career revival tight end thing, because they got a pretty good year out of Hayden Hurst. They got him paid by the Carolina Panthers the next year. But yeah, Irv Smith was terrible. But the fact that they're most likely at this point losing Tyler Boyd as the slot receiver, you know, Mike Gesicki can run some routes from the slot. He can do the tight end stuff. So I don't know. I mean, again, I shouldn't care, but I sort of kind of care about the Mike Gesicki thing.
They showed they know how to use tight ends. Again, they somewhat revived, as you mentioned, Hayden Hurst. All of us who played in deep leagues towards the end of the year, we're still competing, all know about Tanner Hudson, since we were just looking for a guy who could score 5 catches, and he was there every single week on minimum playing time. So they at least know how to use their tight ends, yes. And $7.5 million is not something to ignore completely.
All right, John Daigle, we did it. We covered basically every move that matters from an offensive perspective here in free agency. Appreciate you doing with this with me, buddy. And I'm glad the NFL gave us some real big talking points to hit on.
So much so that we're probably going to need a nap after this. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to join. I will tell everyone to go check out your column on the site, as I read it myself. And it helped me also see what you wrapped up throughout the day one, since there's just genuinely too much to even cover on this one podcast.
Yeah, appreciate it. People can definitely go check out the column on the website. Also, make sure you're following John Daigle at Not J Daigle on Twitter. The man is a legend, as you can tell from this appearance on the podcast today. Appreciate you, Daigle. That was awesome. Great show. Great couple days of free agency so far. That's going to do it for us today. On Thursday, we will officially be in the new league year, and Dalton Del Don is going to join me to do a little winners and losers. I mean, it's free agency. You can't not do winners and losers. I mean, give me a break. Until then, we're out.